Welcome to,
or welcome back to, Dark Room Reviews.
My name is Ginger.
And I'm Matt.
Continuing with our horrific Halloween Classics Month, we'll be discussing
the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
This is Richard O'Brien and Jim Sherman's joint venture, a 1975 film based on the stage musical, The Rocky Horror Show.
So let's dive right in.
Well, you may be asking, who are we? I'm an airline pilot, normally out of COVID times by day. Otherwise, I'm a self-proclaimed film buff by night, particularly of the horror variety. That pretty much led us to starting this podcast. We love to discuss all things horror and pick them apart. Me mostly praise them.
Yeah, I tend to just pick them apart. That's my shtick. Yeah, opposite to Ginger, I do have an eye and a knack and a bit of a training for looking and picking out these errors. I do have a film and TV background, mostly on the audio and music side, and even working on a few TV series myself. But because of this, my standard and level and eye for things kind of makes me wary of all things horror. So I guess that means the great debate lives on. So getting into the Rocky Horror Picture Show, this is a 1975 movie based off of the original West End musical production of a similar name, The Rocky Horror Show, just they took out the picture.
Yes.
The film version stars Tim Curry as Frankenfurter, Susan Sarandon as Janet Weiss, Barry Bostwick as Brad Major, and Richard O'Brien himself as Riff Raff. So Richard O'Brien actually did the music in the original stage production.
And fun fact, both Tim Curry and Richard O'Brien were the originals on the West End production. In 1973.
And oddly enough, this movie also makes a guest appearance of Meatloaf for those Meatloaf fans out there.
Those Meatloaf lovers.
So oddly enough, Meatloaf did join the movie after doing the U.S.
Broadway.
Tour. Oh, it was Broadway, not
he
the tour.
Did, yeah, yeah, he did the, he opened the Broadway production of The Rocky Horror Show.
Yes.
And they invited him on for the movie as well.
So now, just to give you guys a little bit of info about this review before we start getting into the specifics of the movie. And again, for those of you that haven't seen this or the West End production or any of the bootlegs that are out there.
See it.
What's wrong with you?
What are you doing?
It's been out here since 1975. 73, even if you wanted to get the bootleg.
And Tim Curry is in, like, just an absolute delight in this movie.
I know we've made fun of Tim Curry before a little bit in other movies he's been
in.
But this is like a role fit for him.
This is made for him.
So while we're going to mostly talk about the movie, we are going to kind of segue a little bit back and forth between the stage production and the movie and kind of try to give you guys an insight to a bit of the cult following that this movie and show, this picture and stage show has. But we are going to try to focus our review portion mostly on the movie.
Mostly on the movie.
Because we actually have very differing opinions from the theatrical production than the movie.
Than the movie, for sure.
So,
okay.
Just keep that in mind. We are going to do a bit of back and forth, but we're going to try to stick to the movie.
Yeah.
So, first off, aside from movies that we both enjoy watching, we've actually gotten into a lot of music theater over the years. I mean, before we had our job losses in the aviation sector, we did do a lot of traveling and actually got to see a couple West End productions throughout even Ontario, Canada, and across the United States on Broadway.
Yeah.
So we've been very fortunate about that. And one that we've recently seen that was we did last Halloween, we actually got to see.
Well, we have actually done two productions
of Rocky Horror. Yeah. We did one that was out at the Stratford Festival in Stratford, Ontario. And we did another one that was in downtown Toronto at the University of Toronto. That was one of their Heart House Clubs. I cannot say that ever.
Yeah, Heart House Clubs.
And so we've actually seen a bit of variety when it comes to this, and especially now this year with the podcast, we were like, hey, maybe it's a time to review the movie.
Yeah.
And it surprised me how different the movie was.
Yeah.
So let's give everyone just now a bit of an overview of what's going on here. So this movie follows Brad and Janet, who are now a recently engaged couple.
Yes.
This is supposed to take place. It's supposed to be mocking that 30s to 60s style of B-movie horror. So I like it. They do it very well in the movie and even in the stage production.
Yep.
You know, that over-dramatic, almost transatlantic thing of like, oh, Brad.
Yeah. The silly accents, the silly overacting, they really nail it. Like, they're...
It's a nice in-between of a fine line before making it too ham, and it's still very funny.
Yes, exactly.
The first scene you kind of get is Janet and Brad are just in getting engaged after they, in the movie they do it at the chapel.
Yes.
Where they just witnessed another friend getting married.
Exactly.
And they have the very classic song, Damn it, Janet, I love you.
The road was long, but I ran it.
Janet.
There's a fire in my heart and you fan it.
Janet.
If there's one fool for you, then I am it.
Janet.
I've one thing to say and that's damn it, Janet, I love you.
I personally prefer the stage version better.
Yeah, I like the stage version
because they have the extras kind of coming off stage to do all the backup singing parts, whereas in the movie, it's just kind of like the random people who are just there. I know it's supposed to be the same cast of the Transylvanians, as they like to be called.
Exactly. It, oddly enough, well, not oddly, because this was written for the stage.
It was, yes.
So, quite frankly, it works better on stage.
Yes.
It doesn't really...
Shocking. That's our overall thoughts about this.
That's our overall thoughts on it. It doesn't... Some scenes don't translate perfectly to movie form, and this is one of them.
Yes.
Especially Damn It, Janet, because it's a really funny song. And trust me, that part isn't lost in the movie, but the way that the backup, like the basically the ensemble cast... The way that they're portrayed in the movie is not as good as the way that they're shown on stage.
It's true. The songs are good. Singing's great.
Oh, the singing is still good.
And even getting up to this point, I like the old school, again, hammed up. They do the opening credits at the beginning and they have the music going on.
Yeah.
The, you know, classic double feature
song.
And I think it really works. And I think they definitely get that 30s to 60s B-movie horror feel out of this.
We get introduced very quickly to the narrator.
Which I think in the movie they call him the criminologist or something like that. Or something like that.
He's a narrator.
He's a narrator, essentially. I think they even cast him in the show. Like, the role in the show is the narrator.
Now, I like him. Like, the actor in the movie was really, really good. However, it still works better on stage.
Well, so I find the problem with this. So then we just cut...
Yeah.
Like, we see the whole Brad and Janet thing at the beginning, and it's starting off like a normal movie, and then we just cut to someone who has, like, a police file.
Yeah, and he's telling you
and
about
he's telling
the,
you about
the events
that took place. I'm like, okay. But then they also don't go far enough. Mm-hmm. That's the thing I don't like about it. Whereas in the theater production, they just introduce him kind of as a narrator, where they even start the show being like, now we're going to talk about...
Yeah, exactly.
...a strange and peculiar night.
And
now we just kind of jump to this guy. It doesn't really have any context.
The cuts make it more difficult to understand, whereas on stage, he's literally a narrator...
Almost the...
...telling you a story.
...not the whole time, but for most of the show.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's the one thing I didn't care about that. So now we're getting into the bulk of the actual Rocky Horror... storyline.
Yeah, so Brad and Janet are out one night. They're driving. It's like crappy weather. They end up getting a flat tire, and then they kind of look at each other and say, didn't we pass a castle a while back? Which is so funny, because they really do a good job at, I don't know,
making
just
it
that
seem so hammed and like
so ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, it's like we did.
Denton, some insert Midwestern state here.
Right. Sure enough, they get out of their car, they walk in the rain, and they happen upon a literal castle. Very 70s effects are going on in the movie. Very 70s effects.
And I think that is an homage to the old B-movie effects, where it was like film overlays, old school techniques. Oddly, fun fact, I saw this in the credits.
Yeah.
The same guy, I don't know if it's because the budget was too low, but they actually used the same person to do both the film editing and the music editing.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That usually never happens.
Yeah, that could have been a budgetary reason.
Could have been a budget thing. And also, when you're doing stuff like this, where it is mostly music theater, you're not going to be using a lot of the master on-set dialogue anyways. It's going to be replaced regardless. So
right.
I think just having that one person that kind of synced it all up could have been a good choice, mm-hmm. or could have been a budget thing. But
I think they actually did a good job. Like, upon, like, re-watching this movie.
Like, yes, you can definitely tell that it was done after. Yeah, yes. That's for sure. But, mm-hmm. I mean, that was for the 70s anyways. Mm-hmm. It's pretty well synced. Like, there's only a couple issues where you're like, eh, mm-hmm. that didn't really line up, but...
But considering all the the lyrics...
Oh, considering that wasn't popular to do dialogue replacement back then.
Yeah. They did a pretty good job with mm-hmm. it. Yeah.
So now we have, you know, there's a light over at the Frankenstein place, whatever that song is.
Yeah.
And I like it. Now, the problem I had with it is, in general, Susan Sarandon's singing, I don't care for the way that they had portrayed her. I don't necessarily think she's a bad singer.
No.
That's not the case. I'm not trying to put that out there. I just think they made her seem so...
Breathy.
Breathy, head voice, whiny, like, distressed. Yeah. Insert female distressed character here.
Yeah. Which, I suppose they're trying to make her fit into that.
Yeah.
Into that box, but they could have done a better job at it.
Like, she could act that way. I think if she had the exact same acting, but just had a little bit more support in her singing, it would have been, like, perfect.
Exactly. Whereas the person playing Brad did a really good job mm-hmm. of that. So then you get into one of the first, like, super, super classic songs. That's the Time Warp.
Yeah, so Brad and Janet end up going to the castle, trying to see if they can use a telephone to call for help, because, you know, this is the 50s, and cell phones are not a thing.
Yeah.
So they try to go in, and we meet the first character, Riff Raff,
yeah.
who actually, in this movie, is played by Richard O'Brien,
who wrote
the show originally.
Yeah.
And
he's playing, like, the character is done very, very well. Like, he's the... He's playing an homage to, like, the old, like, kind of hunchback character in, like, Frankenstein movies or...
And realistically, Rocky Horror, again, for those of you that haven't seen it, and I don't know why you haven't...
Yeah, yeah.
...is an homage to,
Frankenstein.
Like, Frankenstein. Really. It's kind of taking...
Monster. Yeah,
it's a combo of that, a little bit of pantomime, a little bit of music theater.
Yep.
It's a bit of everything. It's a bit of a mishmash.
It's a bit of everything, and you can tell that they're doing... It's not really a question mark, like, what they're doing with those characters. Like, it's fairly obvious. Mm-hmm. So, basically, Riff Raff opens the door to them, and they have kind of an awkward exchange. Brad is the one who's just kind of pushing it. He's like, sure, this is fine. Let's go in and get a phone. And Janet's like, I'm cold and frightened. I want to go.
Yeah.
Which is a classic, like, so when you see this on a stage production... People tend to get really involved with certain lines, and
there's a lot of shouting from the audience, very pantomime style, where you get the audience involved.
Yeah, so the audience gets involved. So the whole, like, I'm cold, I'm frightened, and I'm wet, like, everybody usually
yells along
with that particular line.
You also yell and make fun of characters. Like, I think every time they say Janet, it's like slut,
Brad,
asshole.
Yeah, like, there's a lot of fun audience participation with mm-hmm. any of the stage productions. We've seen Stratford, which is extremely professional.
Yes.
Right? And we've also seen University of Toronto's
The Heart House
production.
Which was very well done.
Oh my gosh, fantastic. Like, they just did a great job. You almost could not tell the difference between Stratford's professional
production. The only difference
production.
Was just the Stratford one had a slightly higher budget for set and effects.
Exactly.
That was
just
basically
set and effects.
I say... Cast-wise,
but
they were...
But casting characters?
Yeah.
Fantastic. Like, We were really, really impressed when we saw that.
Mm-hmm. So now we get into the classic Time Warp.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know about you, but in the movie, it kind of comes out of nowhere.
I know.
And this has kind of been my general thing with most of the numbers is...
They just sort of happen.
They just kind of happen.
Stage productions, it happens way smoother, which is so weird. You would think that it would be the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
Because in film, you actually have the movie magic to be able to seamlessly transition from one room to another room. But I find on stage, the way that they introduce songs, like, let's take Time Warp, for example, you basically, Riff Raff and Magenta,
mm-hmm.
the two, like, kind of main initial characters, are telling Brad and Janet that they kind of stumbled upon them in the middle of a party. They're celebrating, blah, blah, blah. So that's why they start, like,
Jumping into the time warp. They almost add additional details that aren't related to the song in the movie.
Yeah.
And then cut back to the song.
Yeah.
They kind of just, like, start walking through the house, then, boom, music starts. And you're like, that doesn't really happen in a musical. Like, there's usually a bit of an underscore. There's a bit of an intro. There's, like, a vamp starting.
Yeah.
So that was the one odd thing that I guess I didn't remember from seeing this film years ago and only seeing the stage production. And it makes sense why I didn't like it when I first saw the movie.
Yeah. Now, I will say that the transition from Time Warp to Sweet Transvestite and the introduction of Frankenfurter is way better.
Yes.
Like,
so Time Warp, great song.
Time Warp is still great.
And like, it's still choreographed exactly the same. Now, the thing I don't love is, again, the back and forth with the narrator.
Mm.
I think it's, again, because they're physically doing cuts back to the narrator. Like, they literally just have Time Warp, and then you cut back to the office, and he's like, it's just a step to the left.
Yeah. And then they cut back to the ensemble.
Whereas, like, when you're on stage, that can happen simultaneously, and you know it's two separate places.
Well, it's really clever on stage because the ensemble is still singing and dancing, and the narrator just stands
there, walks out, and says,
and it's just a step to the left, and he walks back.
Yeah.
You know? It's a very quick thing, whereas, oddly enough, in the movie,
it's almost distracting.
It's a hard cut, and it's really, it's just disjointed.
Yeah.
Right? But like we said, the transition from Time Warp to meeting Frankenfurter, who sings Sweet Transvestite, is so well done because of the way that they're introducing him. So he's being lowered down on the little elevator. And he's, like, you know, tapping his, like, super platform shoe.
Yeah.
And to the beat, and then he, like, starts singing right away. So the transition to that one is way better, way more seamless, really similar to the stage production.
Mm-hmm. Brad, please, let's get out of here.
For God's sake, keep a grip on yourself, Janet.
But it seems so unhealthy here.
It's just a party, Janet.
Well, I want to go.
Well, we can't go anywhere till I get to a phone.
Well, then ask the butler or someone.
Just a moment, Janet. We don't want to interfere with their celebrations.
This isn't the Junior Chamber of Commerce, Brad.
They're probably foreigners with ways different than our own. They may do some more folk dancing.
Look, I'm cold, I'm wet, and I'm just plain scared.
I'm here. There's nothing to worry about.
How do you do, I see you've met my faithful hand in hand. He's just a little broad dime, because when you knocked, he thought you were the candy man. Don't get strung out by the way I look. Don't judge a book by its cover. I'm not much of a man by the light of day, but by night I'm one hell of a lover. I'm just a sweet transvestite from transsexual Transylvania.
Almost identical, actually.
Almost identical there, yeah.
You can agree, like,
because
even in a lot of stage productions, they will have him either, like, lifting from some underneath part of the stage.
Yeah, or just lowering, emerging from the back, like, or from emerging upstage from the back, and upstage. Walking down. Yeah.
Exactly. Like, the two stage productions that we've seen have been that, and it's very similar.
Yeah.
Similar vibes.
So now, I don't know about you, Tim Curry in this, love it.
Love it.
He has the just the right amount of hammed up.
Yeah.
The right amount of just, like,
weirdness
and quirkiness and just kind of loving the role.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. And that's what I think you need to have, like, a really good Frankenfurter production cast member. And both the productions that we had a few. One professional, Dan Chamorro.
Yeah.
And the other one was Chris Ajuji.
Yes.
Both in the Toronto area. Both of them.
Amazing.
Amazing.
But they make it.
That's they make the that role.
I do think that if you had somebody who wasn't into that role as much, that would break your show.
Mm-hmm. It would.
Because that's the character you're waiting to see.
Yeah, that is, like, the appearance of the one character that's going to take you through the rest of the show.
Yes, exactly. And those, and the two Toronto ones that we saw, they weren't just pretending to be Tim Curry, pretending to be the
character. No, they all put their own little spin on it.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about the character of Frankenfurter is it's Tim Curry's version of Frankenfurter.
Yes.
It's Dan's version. It's Chris's version. Exactly. It's whoever's playing this role. And they can live it up to as much as they want and add their own little spins exactly. to it. And I think the way that Tim Curry did it is great. He's got enough of the, you know, British pantomime experience. Yes.
So I read a fun fact about this. When Richard O'Brien first wrote The Rocky Horror Show, he actually wrote this character for Tim Curry. So he had seen Tim Curry in a West End production of Hair. That's where they first discovered him. And he wrote this character based off of knowing Tim Curry for just a couple minutes.
Yeah.
So the direction that he was told to go in was, you know, he was told about the character and who he is and stuff. But he was also saying, like, imagine, though, that the character is not just a queen, but the Queen of England. Yeah. So that's what's with this sort of posh overtones to the way that Tim Curry, like, portrays the character. Yeah. Because that was the direction that he was given. And I thought, what a funny, like...
Well, what a fun way to kind of be that character.
Yeah, not just a queen.
But like, you're the queen, drag queen of England.
You're the Queen of England. Yeah. Like, so that's kind of the posh spin that he put on that character,
mm-hmm.
which I really like.
And again, Frankenfurter is the mad scientist yes. who is now going to take Brad and Janet through his
laboratory.
To his laboratory for his yeah. new experiment creation.
Yes. So once the song wraps up, they take them to the laboratory.
They have to undress them first, of course.
Of course, they have to undress them first. And they introduce them to Frankenfurter's new creation, which is he created a man, of course, with blonde hair and a tan. Mm-hmm. And this man is named Rocky. So Rocky is basically your like muscle man, like Adonis look. Like mm-hmm. that's what they're going for. And he is birthed out of nothing, basically.
Just out of a rainbow-filtered yeah, tank.
Yeah, a rainbow-filtered tank. It's supposed to be all, like, silly sci-fi at that yeah. point. It's mm-hmm. They're doing a really
good fun, good job yeah. with it. And I think, like, it's enough of Frankenstein that people get the idea. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not too far off that people are like, what story is happening?
Yeah.
But it's also enough, it's different enough that you cannot mistake this
yes.
as a parody for Frankenstein.
No.
It's not a parody, it's its own thing that's just kind of taken a bit of everything.
It's an homage.
And I really like that.
Yep. And it's not a parody, it's an homage. Yeah. There's a difference.
And then we have the abrupt entrance of Meatloaf.
Yes.
He just right. bursts out of the freezer.
Yeah.
And so Meatloaf plays the character named Eddie.
Yes.
So we don't know a ton about Eddie at this point. However, I do recall in the stage production that, I think it's Columbia is the name.
Columbia, yeah.
She makes a few more references to Eddie in the stage production yes. before he emerges.
Yes.
Which I don't like in the movie.
Yeah.
You don't know about Eddie until he bursts through. And she's like, Eddie! And you're like, huh?
Yeah.
So you see Eddie, in this case, played by Meatloaf,
yep.
on a motorcycle with, yep. looks like a slashed head wound.
Yep.
And he bursts out and he has his own little number about how yeah. much he loves rock and roll.
Yeah, exactly.
And definitely some stuff going on with Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see Frankenfurter, who yeah. comes by in the middle of a song and mm-hmm. just kills Eddie.
Kills him. Yeah, yeah, like, bludgeons him to death with a hammer.
Now, the thing I don't like about the movie is they use, like, a pickaxe, which seems a little much.
Yeah, yeah.
I like some of the stage productions where they kind of use different things. Like, I remember in Stratford, they use, like, a chainsaw.
Yes, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they had, like, you know, fake body parts flying off stage. It was yeah. good. They made it more silly and, like, gimmicky, which I think is yes. good for this part of the movie, because yeah. it's not supposed to be death serious.
Yeah, the stage productions do a better job at keeping the gory parts silly and yes, funny.
And funny. And mm-hmm. I find this gets almost a little too dark. Yeah. It's a pickaxe, and then you just see his body in blood in yeah. the freezer. And I'm like, oh, man.
Oh, man. It's a little much. It's a little Rocky harsh. Horror. Okay.
And it's not funny in this scene, no. I found.
No.
It's just like Tim Curry's like, eh.
Yeah. Whereas on stage, it is.
It's more funny.
It is funny, for sure.
So that's the one thing I don't like about that scene.
Yeah.
So now we start getting into the marriage scene
yes. of
Rocky and Frankenfurter.
Yeah.
So now after this, basically, Rocky is taken with Frankenfurter to yeah. celebrate his birthday.
Yes.
To the bedroom.
Yes.
As you do.
As you do.
Now, in the stage production, this would close the first act.
Yes.
They end that, and I think they put, like, a do not disturb sign, and when the curtains come down, it's pretty funny.
That's right.
And again, things like those little things where you, like, you the end the of acts, you miss the things. Subtleties of what theater is in the movie, and it kind of loses it a little bit.
Exactly.
But, what are you going to do in an adaptation for film?
There's only so much.
Yeah.
So then you get the pretty classic scenes between Janet and Frankenfurter, and then Brad and Frankenfurter. It's well done. So essentially, they're kind of happening very quick
in succession.
Yeah. Yeah. Where Janet kind of...
So everyone's kind of whisked away. Bed. Yeah, everyone's whisked away to bed, and they're like, we're just going to lay low for the rest of the night.
So Janet goes to... She's going to go to sleep. She's, you know, in bed, and it's the in the movie, they do the silhouette. Now, each stage production has done their own different spin on this. I would say
more typically the silhouette is done.
More typically the silhouette, but
we saw one in Stratford where they actually used a vertical bed. So that, like, imagine, like, you're standing up and it looks like a bed if you're looking at it from the top down.
Almost like you have a pretend bird's eye view of the bed.
So they're standing on stage, like, vertically.
Yeah.
But you're looking, like, as if you're right on top of the bed. Yeah. And they had, like, an elastic...
Yeah.
Almost rubbery substance that looked like the bed sheet.
Yeah.
And they use that as the silhouette to kind of give you
the illusion very of what's going
phallic
on.
Shaped illusions
of what's going on.
Yeah. But they still kept that integrity. So they didn't actually have just silhouettes. They actually had them, like...
I really like that.
The Stratford
production was really fun, like the way
that it was fun, the way they did that, because they made, of course, a lot of penis jokes.
Of course,
obviously, you have to.
Obviously,
but typically in the movie, they go and they do the silhouette, like the big kind of veiled bed.
Yes, but in all cases, what is happening is that Janet is tricked. She thinks that the person who comes in is Brad. They start, like, making out. They're starting to get, you know, into things. And then very quickly she pulls off a wig and she realizes it's Frank, and she's like, oh, it's you, and puts up a really weak fight. And then they proceed to, you know, have sex.
And I just love the dialogue here where it's like,
what have you done with Janet?
Nothing. Why do you think I should?
She says, what about Brad? And he's like, why?
Do you think I should do something with him?
Yeah. Yeah, it's well done.
Yeah.
And then the next scene
is the same thing, but happens to Brad.
Yeah.
So Janet.
Yeah.
Frankfurter disguised as Janet walks in. Yeah. He thinks it's Janet.
Yeah.
They start doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And the exact same line happens.
Yeah. So
that scene's hilarious. I think no matter which way you do in every little production you see. Mm-hmm. Now, this is the problem that you have with the movie, is it only does it the one way.
Yes.
I found every production, and this is the one that is nice about live theater, you go in and every little Frankenfurter does it just a little different. They have their own little one-liners. Yeah, they have their own little like things that they do with the silhouette, and they change it from show to show.
Exactly.
They kind of make it their own. Either way, the scene's hilarious.
Yeah. So while Brad and Frankenfurter are kind of getting it on, Janet sort of sneaks out, and she ends up watching one of the, like, house security photos of them kind of in bed together. And again, each production has their own way of Janet catching this.
Yeah.
But in the movie, Susan Sarandon's acting is really, really good. She just sort of, like, really hams it up, and she's like, oh, Brad. And they do the several cuts of her, like
sad, you know, on different places.
And,
yeah.
And on different places. Like, it, that part is really good from her acting perspective.
Now, meanwhile, during this, Riff Raff has aggravated Rocky.
Yes.
And he's run away.
Yes.
So now Rocky is trying to flee the castle, but has been brought back by dogs or something.
Yeah.
That's in the movie. I don't remember that happening. I think he just is loose in the stage production.
Yeah.
Either way, they use guard dogs to get him back into the castle.
So then Janet runs into Rocky at this point.
They meet together because Rocky's now in the lab hiding from everyone.
Exactly.
And of course, Janet does what most people would do after seeing, like, a half-naked muscular man who doesn't know anything.
Sure.
And they start having some fun times.
Yeah, exactly. So then Janet kind of lusts after him. Rocky falls for her.
And I do, so this is actually the one time in the movie I do like the back and forth, because it makes a lot of sense.
Yes.
So Magenta and Columbia are in, like, their own room.
Yep.
And they're doing backups to Janet's song, which, you know, touch it, touch, 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 touch me. That one. Mm-hmm. That song. And they're kind of watching this on a closed circuit camera.
Yes.
And they're kind of making fun of her a little bit. And I actually do like the little back and forth in that scene of the movie.
Yes.
Because that makes a lot more sense.
Yes.
And that's kind of how they do it in the stage production, too, is they're just kind of there watching.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that. It's a good number.
Next, we have the entrance of Dr. Scott. So this is really funny. Again, each stage production does their own little spin on this. But I like it in the movie, too. So they all kind of
Just before, before they all kind of meet together, we get introduced to Dr. Scott.
Mm-hmm.
Frankenfurter and Brad all meet in the laboratory, and they find Janet with Rocky, and everyone's all mad at each other.
Yes.
And they're interrupted by someone arriving at the castle in a wheelchair.
In a wheelchair.
And Brad identifies him as, oh, that's my high school science teacher, Dr. Scott.
Yeah.
And Frankenfurter, you can tell Frankenfurter knows who this person is like, mm-hmm. What? You sent him here. You know what's going on. And Brad's like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So now they do this weird, magnet thing.
Yeah.
To have the wheelchair race through the entire castle and burst through a wall.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
It's funny. Like, I do kind of like that. It's silly. That is just a pure homage to just, like, B-movie horror.
Yeah, definitely.
And they bring Dr. Scott to the lab.
Yeah.
So now, this is where I have so much fun with this scene.
Yes.
So now that they're all there, everyone's all shocked, and they're in that, like, you know, 40s, you know, dun dun.
Yeah.
And they all kind of go like, Brad, Janet, Dr. Scott, Rocky. And they do this like five times.
Over and over again. It is so good. It's so silly. And every time Rocky gets his name called,
he just doesn't respond.
He just looks. He's the only one who's not saying anything. So it's extra funny when they kind of zoom in on Rocky.
And it's that old B-movie, like, ham to the nines, like, Brad, Janet, Dr. Scott,
Janet,
Rocky,
Dr. Scott,
Brad,
Janet, Brad, Rocker, Janet, Dr. Scott, Janet, Brad, Rocker, Janet, Dr. Scott, Janet, Brad, Rocker.
Yeah, and it's like, so good. It's
just a silly back and forth. And again, you may not like it if you're not into that British pantomime style, but this is really, like, down that road where, you know, that's pretty classic.
Yeah.
So now we have the next scene where they're all kind of brought in. They get rudely interrupted by Magenta after this whole endeavor. They're trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
Saying that dinner has been ready.
Yes.
So now they get whisked over to the dinner scene.
Yes.
And my God, can you tell this movie was in the 70s?
Mm-hmm.
So they bring out this roast, air quotes, and they leave, like, a super 70s, like, off-white cream colored
electric carver
to carve the roast.
Yeah.
And Frankfurter just stands up and just turns it on, and it's so obnoxiously loud.
Yeah, it's
I do like that they put that in there, like, they're making fun of the time.
Yes.
They don't do that in the stage production.
No, they don't.
I don't even really remember the dinner scene too well in the stage production.
I don't remember it, which it might be there, might not be there, or it might just be, like, a side note. They might just be in the dining room.
Yeah, and they find him. I do remember that they find a body part.
Yes.
That I do remember.
Yeah.
So, during the scene, they serve up dinner, and you realize that the roast that they're all eating is actually
Eddie.
Yes. You know, another Just for Laugh gags here. You're eating. Eddie.
Yeah.
Side note, we didn't mention this earlier. Eddie is Dr. Scott's nephew.
Yes.
And he has a number about it earlier before they go to the dinner scene where they're kind of talking about how much of a problem Eddie was. Again, that number also kind of comes out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
It does fit in at least a little bit better with the storyline.
Yeah.
Essentially, you get the idea that Eddie has kind of been a problem, kind of ran away and you also get told that the things that Frankenfurter is working on is stuff that Dr. Scott has been working on in terms of, like, you know, the biomolecular stuff.
They're rivals, essentially.
Yes. So that's kind of where we're at. So then at the end of the dinner party, Frankenfurter gets mad and rips off the table, and reveals Eddie's dead body in the table. Yeah. You know, nice little decorative dinner set there.
Of course.
Obviously.
Everybody has that, a coffin in their dinner table, right?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And everyone starts running away, but then Frankenfurter traps them in the lab with the electric grappling magnet shoe thing that only affects certain people, but not him.
Yeah, so it turns, it basically traps them and sticks them to the floor. And then he turns them all
into statues.
Into statues, one by one.
Now, this is one thing I like that they use the technology for the movie for that.
Yes.
Because on the stage, they don't get, quote, turned into statues, but they do get frozen.
Yes.
Again, you can't really do major transformations like that on stage, so
it does. This does translate better
for the movie. I like that change.
Yeah.
So they all kind of get brought over, and basically Frankenfurter is like, "Oh, right, now it's time for the night show or something like that." I can't remember. The floor show.
The floor show. Yeah.
So he brings them all over to this stage where he basically dresses them all up and he has
like himself.
Yeah. And has this giant night show / orgy party.
Yes.
It's segueing into an orgy party.
Yeah.
So now they all get taken over there, and everyone's got fishnet stockings and corset, and that's about it.
Yeah.
And this is a nice homage to the original production.
Yeah.
So I like that this is done the way it is. This has a very Chicago movie style feel.
It does.
Where, you know, they're still telling the story, but you know very much that it's a musical number.
Yes.
That's the one part of the movie where it's not trying to be, like, a musical.
It's like,
a segue away, and we're doing a number that also tells the story.
Yes.
I do like that.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where the narrator kind of makes a bit more sense.
Yep.
And Dr. Scott's also adding a little bit of commentary when he gets, you know, unstatued.
Yes.
So, essentially, everyone kind of one by one joins in on this number. Frankenfurter kind of has his giant entrance once again.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of a Great Gatsby thing here. They have a pool in this one, which was a little odd. I don't remember that when I first watched it.
Yeah.
And essentially now everyone's kind of done their little number and they're jumping into the pool to have this like giant sex orgy thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Then out of nowhere, Magenta and Riff Raff come blasting in their weird alien costumes.
Yeah, because they're aliens.
That's the twist ending here. Yeah. They're all aliens.
They're all aliens.
From Transylvania.
Yeah.
As, you know, that happens.
Yeah.
And they are barging in to basically tell Frankenfurter that they're leaving.
Yes.
They're going back home.
Yeah.
Now, one thing I don't like about this is this is another moment where it kind of comes out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
Not out of nowhere. Again, we've seen it, so we know it's coming. But for someone that hasn't seen it, like, they've only mentioned that they're trying to go home, I think, one other time.
Yeah.
I think just before the floor show, Magenta asks Frankenfurter, like, well, are we going to go home soon?
Yeah.
And that's, you know, where you get the,
I ask for nothing, Master.
And you shall receive it in abundance.
Yeah, like, I guess they just do a better job on the stage productions of hamming up those little scenes so that you know that they're aliens before they actually make the big reveal that they're aliens.
So after they kind of barge in this part of the movie, we're kind of winding down to the end of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it wouldn't be a true heartbreak tragedy musical without some deaths happening.
Of course.
So we find out after all this that Riff Raff and Magenta are not just looking to leave. They are looking to get rid of Frankenfurter.
Yes.
Big shocker.
Yeah.
They've been peeved as what's been happening to them. And they have like a slight chase. And at the end, Frankenfurter is shot by a really bad laser effect.
By a really, really cheesy 70s laser effect.
Yeah, like I think Star Wars had better.
They did.
Yeah. And he dies Great Gatsby style into the pool.
Yep.
And Rocky tries to save him, so to say, and also gets killed in the process.
Yes.
You know, happy ending. And Riff Raff and Magenta let everyone else go just moments before the entire castle skyrockets into bad.
It literally blasts off and becomes its own rocket ship.
It reminds me like one space. Of those episodes of like one of the Mario games where it doesn't like one of the characters like take Peach's castle and like
and
lift
just,
it
like,
up
blast off.
It reminds me of that. Yeah, I remember playing that
fair.
As a kid.
That's fair.
That is what happens with about the same level of effect, if not slightly worse. Mm-hmm. But again, I do appreciate the attempt at recreating those old school effects.
Yes.
I don't think that was a budget issue. I do think that that was an honest, conscious choice to do that.
They used like an old shadow effect for it.
Yeah, where they overlay the film and you basically play two on top of each other.
I actually didn't have a problem with it because they're not trying to make it this like
big They weren't trying budget. To make it this big blockbuster movie musical.
It's an homage to B horror movies.
Yes.
And they do that. Like, they hit that perfectly.
Now, something very briefly we wanted to talk about before we get into our final score and thoughts was just sort of our opinions as, like, the cult following of this movie. Those of you that, again, don't know, and again, I don't know where you've been the past 30 years, but Rocky Horror has this very strange cult following, even though a lot of people are very mixed on the movie. Yeah. So this is going to segue into our scores, but we've noticed that, again, we mentioned a little bit before in this review, like, we've gone to some productions, and it's not uncommon to just dress up.
Yeah.
Be in costume. And that's like,
it's part of the fun of it all.
That's part of the fun, and that is a little bit in the pantomime style, but not that much. No. Not to this extent.
No, Rocky Horror has its own following of people that, these are people who would normally even see like a pantomime style show and not get into it as much as they get into Rocky Horror.
Yeah, like they take elements from it where like, it's more informal. You get to have some audience interaction. Usually you get to like boo characters or show from the audience, but not to the point where it's like, I've gone to Rocky Horror in full drag.
Yes, with my help.
Yes, I don't do drag makeup.
That's me. And I dressed up as Magenta.
Yes.
So it's very different from that experience. The other thing to remember too is that on stage they also treat it a little bit differently too. Well, they will play off their audience as well.
Yes.
They certainly break the fourth wall. They
And that's very much true in the pantomime style where it's like it knows it's a show.
It knows it's a show. So for that, if I was rating Rocky Horror show as a musical, like as a stage production, I can give it like a near 100 because it's hilarious from pretty much beginning to end.
Music's
I love
great.
The music and the way that it's done is really clever and really funny and just like totally poking so much fun at itself. Right? It's not taking itself seriously at all. It's being intentionally silly.
Intentionally funny.
The movie, although it still hits those points,
is not as effective.
It's just not as effective. It's just, it loses something in translation from stage to film.
And I think the reason that so many people maybe don't get into it or maybe have these mixed reviews on it is because they've only seen the movie. And I think the cult following started in the Broadway West End world. Mm-hmm. I think that's where it initially started because that's a very common thing to for. I mean, even look at now in present day, we still have people that are pining to go see Hamilton.
Yes.
That will, like, dress up as these characters from the musicals.
Definitely.
And, I mean, here, even look now, like, Phantom of the Opera.
Oh, yeah.
Like, these are still almost cult status shows.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that's kind of where that thing stemmed from and why so many people either loved it or hated it. Mm-hmm. They knew it from the stage production and could forgive the elements of the movie.
People couldn't. I can certainly forgive the elements of the movie. Don't get me wrong. There are still parts of the movie that I do love. Mm-hmm. The fact that it's Tim Curry playing Frankenfurter, he still is excellent, and so is Riff Raff, so is Magenta, so is Columbia. Like,
and the storyline is equally as hilarious. Yeah. I find the things that they kept that were funny were great. I'm glad they left those in the movie.
Right. It's just that, it's got a real 70s wash to the entire movie.
I'm not even upset about that. It's just they could have done so much by telling it through film.
I know.
And they didn't go there. Like, a prime example of this, I know it's not a horror movie, but is Chicago.
Yes.
If anything, they took Chicago and made it better than the original stage production.
Chicago the movie, I can confidently say, is better than the stage production. And you and I have seen the tour. The tour when it came to Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
And you've seen it.
I've also seen it on Broadway as
well. Yeah, and you saw it on Broadway as well. And don't get me wrong, it was a great show.
Yeah.
I still very much enjoyed it. But that movie was done
And that's the thing, is it took the base story, kept all the songs, did the cut aside for the numbers when it made sense.
But really added the movie magic to it. Like
it did. And the storyline went so much better. And that's the thing that I think got lost in Rocky Horror was it starts off.
But
yeah, it starts off that way, but it just got so disjointed. It felt like a weird missing storyline with musical numbers.
Musical numbers.
Inserted in at weird points.
It's like, oh, we're dancing now. Okay.
And I think the only reason people know what's going on is because they know Rocky Horror, because they've seen it on stage.
Yeah. So that's how I look at it. That's certainly how I look at it.
Now, giving all that aside, let's jump into our scores. So as you know, this is the part of the podcast where we're going to give a few more comments on what we liked, didn't like. You already kind of heard all of that, but we'll give you a nice little wrap-up score out of 100.
Mm-hmm.
So here we are.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give this an overall score. It's a 55.
Yeah. I think that's still a little low. I'm giving the movie a 65.
And we're clarifying, this is just the movie, not the Rocky Horror universe.
Yeah, so I landed on a 65 out of 100 for just the movie. Again, I'm making this very clear. If I could just rate Rocky Horror as in the stage production, I might even say
80s, 90s.
Yeah, I might even say
I would edge into like almost a near perfect score.
A near perfect score, especially when you have a good Frankenfurter.
Yes.
Like, and we have seen two of them actually that were phenomenal. So those, the particular productions that Matt and I have seen, I would actually say they were hundreds because they were that good.
Now, the problem that I'm getting hicked up on in terms of just the movie is
the flow of
the flow of the storyline. Like, you lose the storyline. So for me, like, I can't even really give it any marks for the storyline, because if I was just taking it as that movie,
I know I
wouldn't know what was going on.
Yeah.
Now the acting, I gave high marks.
It's very good. Yes.
Now visual effects, I appreciate. They're in that style. I don't hate them
just because we don't love the style, but you can see that it had a clear choice. So unlike our last one, where it was sort of, you know, where Sleepy Hollow was sort of teetering on the brink of like
an
homage to Hammer Horror, but had like a very much a big blockbuster type
budget
gloss over it. It was like, well, what are you doing? Like, which one is it?
Stay in your lane.
Stay in your lane.
Whereas this one has picked its lane. Oh, it's doing it very well.
This one picked its lane. It's doing it very, very well. At least it has that. It picked a style and it went with it, and it really represents it properly. Do I think that style is awesome? No, not necessarily.
No, but again, I think they did it in the best way possible of like knowing it wasn't the greatest and making it into a pantomime, like making it relevant, making it funny, making it interesting.
Yeah, poking fun at it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, lastly, the last two things here, like the music and sound effects, music numbers.
Really
loved.
Good. Really good.
Sound effects, as many.
Yeah.
But I mean, underscore, atrocious.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
I know, for the
70s called, and they want all of their Moog synth bath.
It's so bad.
It's so bad.
So I didn't remember how bad it was until we rewatched the movie for this podcast. Because again, I've seen stage productions,
and they have a normal Rocky Horror underscore thing where they're just kind of either vamps from songs or intros into songs.
Yeah, it's not.
But my God, they wrote a separate score for this movie, and it is blatantly obvious when the score comes in.
Yeah,
it is like one Moog modular synth, which is like the 80s, 70s. That old, like not Aerosmith, was the other bad band of that time. Air Supply.
Ew.
Yeah, like, think of that in synth, and that's the underscore.
It's just that. It's really bad, and it's noticeable, actually.
Very noticeable and just glaring, and that was distracting for me.
Mm-hmm.
And last, the movie ending satisfaction rate, I just found that the stage production, again, trying to keep the stage production aside, I don't like the ending. It comes out of nowhere. It blindsides you, and then it just ends.
Yeah.
And it sucks. I am trying to keep my impressions of the stage production out of it, but it just is so hard when that's what you've seen and what you're used to.
Mm-hmm.
And especially watching the movie, again, if I had just seen the movie as on a first watch,
I'd be like, what is this?
And if you had asked me, like, let's go see where I grew up, like, why?
Yeah.
I'm like, it wasn't that good.
I know.
And I don't mean to bring it down, because, like, it isn't, again, a good storyline or a good show.
Yeah.
Just this movie as a standalone piece without knowing anything else about the show, it would blindside me. It would just be like,
no, I know.
What?
This movie really goes along with the stage production.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost hoping that you've seen the musical actually on stage.
Because if you didn't, you'd be lost on some key elements.
Yeah,
it'd just be super weird. You'd be like, all right, there's a time warp, and then...
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, I know. I agree.
It just loses that for me. Yeah. But overall, love the universe, the Rocky Horror universe. We'll gladly see it on stage again.
Yeah, we'll see it again.
Maybe we won't see the movie, but...
When we can go do stuff again.
When we can see live theater again. Yeah. That's, like, the one thing we want to do.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so those are our thoughts on that.
Yeah. All right. For our next installment, and our last installment of horrific Halloween classics, we'll be discussing
Halloween.
Thanks so much for joining us once again on
Dark Room Reviews.